Good morning and welcome to this podcast from Greater Manchester Poverty Action. Today we're going to be talking to some friends from the Manchester Poverty Truth Commission. We've got Lizzie, who's one of the facilitators, and she's going to tell us about the Truth Commission. And then we've got Riz and Gemma. Riz is a commissioner, and so is Gemma. They're grassroots commissioners. Riz, I know, we may well encourage him to play us out because he plays piano on the flute. Not at the same time.
Yes, in
that's very impressive. And Gemma, Gemma lives in Withenshaw, has two daughters, and has a bit of a cold at the moment. So we wish her well for that. But if she sounds a bit throaty, that's why. So we're grateful for them joining us today. We're going to have a conversation for 20 minutes or so about sort of lived experience through the lockdown around issues like of poverty. And I'm going to let Lizzie introduce us to the Poverty Truth Commission. Hi, Lizzie.
Hiya.
Just if you could just tell us a little bit about the Truth Commission and what your role in it is and what it's aiming to achieve.
Yeah, so the Poverty Truth Commission is something actually that's happening all across the country in different cities. And Manchester set one up last year. And it's all about bringing together Manchester's key decision makers alongside with those people who have lived experience of poverty. And the idea is that kind of through the process of really getting to know each other and hearing each other's stories and listening, really listening to each other, that we might begin to ensure that those affected by the decisions that are made for the city are become central to the decision-making process.
Okay.
And the kind of the commission believes that poverty will only really be truly addressed when those who experience it firsthand are at the heart of the process. Because how on earth can we make like decisions or begin to address poverty without actually involving the experts? And in this case, the experts are Gemma and Riz and people like them who have lived experience of poverty, people who've had direct experience and are living day in and day out with poverty. And there's a strap line that we have, which is nothing about us without us is for us. And really that's the premise behind the commission, that together we can make better solutions to those who are facing poverty, and by really listening to the struggles and the challenges that people face every day.
Thanks for that, Lizzie. It's a good introduction. I assume it's been the Truth Commission's been running for the last few months, running through the lockdown period.
It has. It's looked really differently. I didn't say, but my job is I'm a co-facilitator, so help those conversations happen. And we've been meeting on Zoom, and we've been helping a little bit with some of the City Council strategies going forward. Different people have come to talk to us and asked us what our opinion is. So we've been doing different things, but normally we would meet once a month as a 15 civic and business commissioners and 15 grassroots commissioners to spend like a good amount of time kind of chatting through some of the stuff. But yes, okay. We launched last June and it began a few months before that. And the process is continuing now and it will continue into the new year.
Okay. I remember the launch. I think it was at the at the Locks.
It was, yeah.
I think I remember Riz playing his flute.
Ah, yes.
I've got experience of Riz's musical abilities and they were very good. Very good it was too. Turning to you, Riz. Can you just tell us what your role as a commissioner is and what your kind of hopes for the Truth Commission are? What do you see it achieving?
Again, good morning to everyone. Well, my role is to offer my poor self my sincere possible services, my time, my thoughts, and my experience.
Yeah.
It's to share my feelings and views and reasons that cause poverty, and to present best solutions to eliminate poverty according to the best of my perception and ability.
Good.
It is to encourage fellow commissioners to stay strong and give don't give up a fight against the poverty, which is actually inequality. The most lovely part is of my role is to put myself in shoes of the poor and feel what poverty is like. It's not new to me. Okay. I've got a lot of experience of this. And my hope is that Manchester Poverty Truth Commission will make the authorities and decision makers to understand that there is no empathy. Well, even there is no sympathy, I will say, but we are absolutely lacking empathy. And there is no coordination in different departments. Every department is working and every employee is working just for job's sake. They don't know the real soul of their job, what their job should give the results. I have got a personal experience now, since I'm again in, homeless and in temporary accommodations. If you allow me, I can share and I can fix that thing in what I'm saying. If you allow me, please.
Yes, of course.
Right. In April, when COVID was at its peak, I brought everything to, like everyone was stockpiling things in home for staying in. Due to a misunderstanding, my wife called police and they, at that time, I had received from a letter from Department of Health, NHS and local communities and housing. They advised me to shield myself for 3 months in home and don't go out in any case.
Okay.
They came in and I told them the whole story that, well, I need to shield myself. I need to sleep and my family is being noisy. And well, it's not only me, but the whole family needs sleep because other disabled members are there as well. But they are not caring because just they are teenagers and their mother is supporting them. They didn't listen to me. And that was a time when no one was out in the streets or roads. They threw me out. Without any accommodation. Well, that was the time that you knock at any door, nobody will open door for you.
No.
Hotels were shut, you cannot go nowhere.
Yeah.
They asked me, we don't want to take you to sell you. Have you got somewhere to go? I said, well, I can try. Give me my phone. They brought my phone from other members of family and gave me. I called a person who was tested positive and he was manager of a security training college. I asked him, I need the key. I want to stay overnight in the building. He said, no, the building is COVID affected and I have been tested positive. I have just came back from hospital.
Yeah.
Don't go there. I said, no, I can go nowhere else. I can't stay on the roads. Police will arrest me and they will find me. I need to spend the night there. He said, well, it can be deadly. I said, give me the key if you can. He said, okay, come on and take the key. I spent the night. Well, police threw me out. They didn't mind any of my health condition. I have got dozens of health conditions that allow me, that force me to stay in bed and take in time medication and rest. I told them of the letter that government has given me to shield myself. No, they said, you just leave the property. Where are you going? They don't know. Okay. Well, I went there, spent the night. Next day, I took advice and I contacted council, homeless department, and they accommodated me in Abbey Hotel in Crumsall. It was a hostel. Many of the drug abusers were there and many criminals were there. Nobody was minding that social distancing, and I had to share fridge and kitchen and toilet and bathroom even. I stayed there about a couple of weeks. Then I was given another accommodation. I'm sitting under the same roof. Now, when I say that there is lack of coordination,
yeah,
we are, the whole family is under treatment and we are being looked after by NHS.
Right.
I told them that this is the situation of myself. These are the conditions. This is the condition of my son. This is the condition of my daughter and my wife. We all need rest. They did not mind, but they put further burden on NHS and council. So I went back to doctor, give me more antidepressants, give me more painkillers. I can't cope, right? The council had to arrange a social support worker for me, which is still not with me. Well, they have spoken a couple of times to me, but I haven't got any support. But the police put the burden on council, social workers, and NHS. And then on housing as well. I mean, it was quite possible for me to stay there and for police to understand that the family needs rest. Unless they rest properly, eat properly, and have a proper routine, they will not have any positive results of their medication or treatment. No. But they just did their job. They were two young officers. I don't think they had any experience of life. They were just officers being recruited, and they came to the call. Now, finished, I am here, far away from Manchester, where I am volunteering normally. Naturally, I am a volunteer. I love doing that. Here is a big problem from here to go back there, Manchester. Now, I told police that my family needs me. They won't be able to cope without me. Now, since schools are open, now, my wife has put pressure again on me. No, one child is diabetic. He should not go in buses. You need to drop him. I need to drive every morning now from here, Haywood, to Openshaw, to Gorton, to Levensium, and come back here. And I have got a lot of conditions which are not, I should take rest. I should not do that much. But there is no other way to keep them safe. But no, last night, My son is positive again. His friend is positive. There is no test in when they enter in school. There is no corona test. And it's being spread in school very, very, very swiftly.
Yeah.
Yes.
You've obviously had quite a difficult time over this period. And it's an interesting point you raise about coordination of services as well.
Yes.
And also the difficulty that you're facing in terms of access and all the rest of it. And that's, you know, presumably made more difficult by the fact that you've got childcare and responsibilities. So you sound like you've had quite a bit of a tough time of it so far. Can I just, I'll come back to you. Can I just ask Gemma? Hiya, Gemma.
Hi.
Hiya. Riz has told us, a difficult story about the time in the recent period and the impact that COVID's had on that. And, you know, it's clearly not made his situation any better. And it's raised a significant number of other challenges. Can you just tell us, Gemma, what your personal experience through the lockdown's been, how it's affected you and your family in your day-to-day life, how the sort of COVID issue, the restrictions have affected you differently in a way?
At the start, you know, everyone was bulk buying and they were running out of food in the shops.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford to bulk buy like the rest did because we live on a week-to-week basic what we get on the benefit system. And my youngest child has allergies. She's allergic to milk. So we have to buy certain milks. And they were being bought out by people that don't even have the allergies just for the sake of buying them.
Yeah.
So we would go around different shops to try and find milk. I had people search, and even members of the grassroots were looking in the end because it got that bad. I had no milk, no yogurts, no nothing for her to eat.
Yeah.
Because people were bulk buying every bit of UTL milk, and soya milk is most of it's UTL.
That's right.
So I couldn't get hold of anything for her.
I mean, Lizzie, just come to back to you. It's just, I mean, there's two sort of key points there. One, I think Riz is raising about, you know, how we coordinate services.
Yes.
Particularly across health and social services and housing.
Yeah.
And Gemma raises that, you know, I think a lot of people forget that key point about, you know, you buy two, get one free, but if you can't afford one,
yeah,
you know, in a sense, people on lower incomes are less yeah. able, really, to take advantage of those. And so bulk buying must have been quite a challenge. I don't know if you've got any experience from any of the other commissioners on that sort of, on those, you know, and just your comments, really, on...
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, isn't it? And it is often those who are struggling financially who get bitten the most in these situations. And I mean, I know that again that a number of our grassroots commissioners maybe have kind of disability issues and can't access transport to get to the big supermarkets. Yeah. And so, you know, could only shop locally, or they couldn't get slots with Asda or wherever because they were all being taken up. And right. so there was a lack of fresh fruit and veg. You know, you could get your convenience foods, but if you want to eat healthily, it was trickier to do. And even with food parcels, which, you know, have been an amazing kind of system that's happened very quickly, but there's no kind of control over, you can't kind of what you get. And if you don't like it, or if you're allergic to it, that's problematic, isn't it?
Yeah,
I know that's been difficult for you, Gemma, hasn't it?
Well, I didn't get the food parcels because I didn't get to Honours Mentor Shield till after shielding.
Because you didn't get a letter, did you? No, missed out.
I'm one of the stopgap that got forgotten about on the shielding. So I was meant to shield, and I never did.
Yeah.
I think, right, go back to Riz. Just, I was interested in the comment you made about empathy. I think that is a really strong issue, really. I mean, you mentioned about the two young police officers, you know, not having that level of experience. And, you know, that's not their fault. They're, you know, they're young. They will get that experience. But Just either Gemma or Riz, just in terms of, is that a common issue around people who you deal with, the authorities you deal with, not really having that empathy about the position that you're in? And I suppose the Truth Commission is at least part of a way of trying to address that.
You get considered, because you're in the poverty area and your income's low, they assume you have a low IQ and you get spoken down to quite a lot.
Right.
Especially when you're trying to get help.
Yeah.
In some places, they're not very friendly.
And is that your experience, Riz? Do you find that lack of empathy frustrating? Or?
Very frustrating. I will like to add one more thing. That since over a week now, I have got a eviction notice from here. From this temporary accommodation, and the rehousing officer is saying that you are intentionally homeless.
Right.
She says that you were capable of making right decision, but you did something deliberately which made you homeless. Now the thing is, she is admitting about a dozen of health conditions, including depression, anxiety, and stress. Now, the mind.org.uk, all the officers in council, I think they should know about mind.org.uk. They are dealing with the mental illness, and whoever is depressed and suffering mental illness, he is unable to make right decisions at right time, especially when he is under of sadistic kind of and opiate kind of medications. Which was, I took overdose that night when I was evicted from home. She admits all the sicknesses and admits that I am suffering chronic depression and stress and anxiety. At the same time, she says that you are mentally very healthy to make right decisions. Okay. Now, it's nothing, but she has put me in an appeal process. And although still government and the council has given me this roof, food is there in the fridge, I can't eat, Mr. John. I'm under the fear that I will be evicted. Where will I go? Would I be like homeless people who I have been helping once? Where would I take my things? No. My family is missing.
Sorry, Riz. I just want to bring Lizzie in on that. It's just, I mean, I suppose that the what Riz is indicating is the sort of disconnect between experiences that people have in their day-to-day lives and the ability of the authorities to take those into consideration. It's, you know, I mean, I often see from people that I deal with that they can sort of take one aspect of a person's life, like their, you know, employment status or whatever, but they can't seem to see in a kind of holistic way.
Yeah.
And I suppose in a sense that the point that, you know, the interesting points that Riz has raised are what the Truth Commission are trying to address.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we spend such a long time kind of building relationships and helping everybody to kind of see the whole picture. Because often in those moments, the person who's got the power is making a very quick decision without really understanding the whole story and the whole background. And so we've had some really powerful moments during the process where somebody has shared an experience that they had, and they won't mind me sharing this, but particularly a young somebody who as a child was in care and, you know, it had a horrendous time of it, was kind of, I think the police got involved at one point because they should have been in school or something, and they were dealt with by the police in such a terrible way. And then as this person, now a grown up and an adult and part of our commission, was able to share this story, you know, and share the reason she was in care and share all the horrible rubbish that was going on in her life, you know, and for this policeman to go, yeah, I can see that was wrong, that what we saw was a naughty kid on the street. What we didn't see was your whole story and this life that was chaotic. And so it's those kinds of conversations that we really hope will help the decision makers to open their eyes to see there's more to this. You know, we have to be slower to make decisions for people. Because you get it wrong. If we jump to solutions, we will jump to the wrong solution.
Okay, I'm just going to. We've got a couple of minutes left. I'd like briefly to ask Riz and Gemma the same question, and it's really, if you were all powerful and you had the power to change one thing that would make your life easier, what would it be? I've come to you, Riz. Just one thing that you could change today that would make your life easy.
I would love to change the approach of officers when they handle the problems of people.
I mean, officers, council officers, police officers, generally?
Yeah, generally. Yeah. Officers.
That's right. Gemma, what would you change? One thing.
Accessibility for disabled people since the COVID restrictions have come in place.
Okay, just tell us a little bit more.
In our local supermarket, there's been barriers put up. I know they've been put up in quite a few. They've become inaccessible to get disabled wheelchairs or scooters down, or sometimes even access to the disabled counters in the shops.
That's good. Lizzie, I won't ask you the same. But if you could just tell us a kind of, you know, a hope for the commission. What's the sort of, what would your ambition for it be? Now you know, the experience that you've had so far.
Yeah. I would love to see just a greater compassion, like Riz said, that there would be that empathy and compassion for people and their circumstances, like a new culture of kind of understanding and seeking to listen before we, and also to be inviting people with lived experience into all decisions that are made, you know, at every level, all the time, because these guys are the experts. They know how it feels to live with the decisions. So yeah, I'd love to see that happening just across the board at all levels.
Thanks very much. I think we'll have to draw it to a close there. I do appreciate your time. Thanks very much to Riz and to Gemma. And if I need a theme tune, I'll get back to you, Riz, and we can play one out on the piano and the flute. I can't play anything, so it'll all be down to you. And thanks, Gemma, for your time. I hope cold gets better. And Lizzie, thank you very much for your time and joining us today. So I'll count us out, and thanks very much to everybody. And look out on our Greater Manchester Poverty Action webpage and Twitter feeds and Facebook pages for the link to this. It's been very interesting and very illuminating, and I appreciate all your time.
Thank you.